This is photographer and Camera Plus co-founder Lisa Bettany, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sherky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 112. Should you even have to ask? In this episode, should photographers have to ask before taking a photo in public? Sam Yang has some Canon and Nikon love coming. One of the goofiest lenses we've ever seen emerges at Photokina. A big Facebook setting you might want to change. Unneeded controversy around the new DJI Mavic Pro drone. And listener Dave Dugdale has a question about nailing focus while ignoring obstacles. All that and more in episode 112 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Lisa, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, sister. Most of you will no doubt recognize the name Lisa Bettany, or perhaps mostly Lisa. She's the Canadian photographer and tech entrepreneur who co-founded the awesome Camera Plus app for the iPhone, an app which has now sold over 14 million copies. Lisa was included in Huffington Post's top 30 influential photographers on the web, Fast Company's most creative people in business, Forbes' top female tech entrepreneur, Business Insider's most influential people in app development, and one of the Apple App Store's inspirational women developers. Above all these awesome accomplishments, she couldn't be a nicer person, and I'd like for all of you to visit her over at mostlylisa.com. Also, follow her on social media and check out all the great things that she's doing out there. Lisa is a shining example of the good that is in this industry we love, and it's well worth your time to check out what she's up to. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 112 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling all your friends on social media and elsewhere, and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. This story comes with a bit of bias because I was a photojournalist for many years, and here in America, with the freedoms that we have, and the First Amendment freedom of the press backing you up, being told to ask someone for permission to photograph them in public just rubs me the wrong way. And it's not about being impolite. It's about being allowed to deliver the truth in a free society. You know, there are exceptions, of course, and discretion is used. There's no use in being a jerk just because it's your legal right, you know? Most people, of course, are not photojournalists. You know, we've steadily been transitioning to a world in which everyone has a camera on them. I'm talking about your smartphone. And everyone is a potential news gatherer. But not everyone knows the rules, of course. In the United States, if you're in public, you can take someone's photo without their permission. You know, they can be in a parade or at a street festival wearing nothing but a few well-placed stickers that say ask first, and you're free to snap away. In fact, you could post those online, in print, show them on TV, etc. Why? Because they're in public. But wait, the sticker told you to ask first. How dare you take a photo? You haven't been granted permission. How rude are you, right? Wrong. Rights are called rights for a reason. A sticker doesn't negate that. Some people are going to be hardcore adamant about being allowed to take a photo in public no matter what, without permission, and others will know when it's perhaps best to let it go. I'm not going to sing the song this time, promise. Tempted, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to let it go. Let it go. I wasn't singing. All right, let's pretend that did not happen. Seriously though, some people think it's worth it to get punched in the face to take a photo of someone, even though A, it's not going to make them any money, and B, usually it's not an interesting photo and not worth it. But they were told no, so fight's on. Personally, I think that's just silly. You know, I don't like hearing no, and especially didn't when I was a photojournalist, but you need to do a quick cost-benefit analysis sometimes. It's not always worth it to take a photo. And like I've said before, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Now, if you're photographing someone who's doing something they shouldn't be doing, and it's newsworthy, or there's some value to that, then have at it, of course. That's a more important photo. But someone in a parade or a street festival who doesn't appreciate you taking their photo, maybe not so much. But it's your choice, though, especially here in America or in other places where you're free to photograph in public. You're good to go. It's up to you. you know, you're the one that has to deal with the consequences. And I always recommend that photographers are prepared and weigh the possible outcomes ahead of time. It helps to put a little bit of thought into these things before you go somewhere where you're going to be taking pictures and not right there when you're confronted. You know, this is why cops and others train for various scenarios. Making a snap decision right there on the spot is not always the best thing to do. Now, the issue of whether or not someone should ask first before taking a photo came up again recently when a photographer took issue with those stickers from the Ask First campaign, which were being worn by people at the Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco. At this rather adult event, participants often get touched by those who can't keep their hands to themselves, perhaps after too much alcohol or maybe just bad parenting, I don't know. Thus, one of the reasons why these stickers exist. But said stickers are increasingly being used to put photographers on notice, and that's where the problem is here. You know, you're in public, so you need to assume that you're going to be photographed, right? And while it's polite to ask, that's not the law, not here in the United States. The photographer who brought this to light, Tony Perez, posted his displeasure with the stickers in some rather colorful language, which I can't repeat here, because that's right, we're trying to maintain our clean rating. Here's the part that I can read, though. Quote, "So while you take your clothes off in an attempt to capture something, someone's attention, let me just walk away feeling like I seriously have no reason or right to take a photo of you, or better yet, of someone else. Think again this year before you leave your house wearing mostly only your idiotic stickers and getting up in my face." End quote. All right, this guy's a little perturbed about the stickers, as you can tell. But you know what? He's got a little bit of a point here. Ask First campaign founder Maxine Holloway responded to the criticism of these stickers and the reason behind them, and while it's too long for me to read here, I think it's worth going over to the show notes for episode 112 at petapixel.com/podcast and to read what she had to say. And on Instagram, she's gone so far as to post, quote, "consensual photography, a handy how-to guide," end quote. And while I understand the points that she's trying to make, it just comes across the wrong way in my opinion. At a private event, maybe you can force people to play by your rules, but in public, no way. Some of those points are common courtesy, but others just come across like they're trying to push their agenda on you. And that's when people don't take what you're saying seriously. If you're in public, you're going to be photographed, whether you have a sticker on you or not. And perhaps that's why you're being photographed. Next. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've heard me mention the name Samyang before. This up-and-coming third-party lens maker has been getting a lot of traction and fans with its 50mm f1.4 and its 14mm f2.8, both autofocus lenses, which thus far have only been available in Sony E-mount. Yeah, if you listen to that recent episode, you're thinking the same thing right here. Sony E-mount. This is what I've been talking about. Sony's been selling those E-mount cameras hand over fist, you know? And a lot of these third-party companies have been filling holes in Sony's lineup and been making a lot of money. All right, quick tangent here. When photographers complain that Sony or another maker doesn't have enough lenses, please remind them about these third-party makers like Samyang, Tamron, soon Sigma, etc., that fill in those holes with often better glass than Sony has. All right, I'll get off my soapbox here, but this is important information to tell people because they always cite that. Well, Sony doesn't have enough lenses, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? A lot of other people make lenses for Sony E-mount. Anyhow, both of these lenses from Samyang are in Sony E, and they've been well received. But now there's word that Canon and Nikon versions are on the way. And that's not at all a bad thing, of course. Competition is very good. Anything that lights a fire under the big two's butts and helps them up their game is a huge win for everyone. Well, in an interview that Focus Numerique did with Samyang's head of product planning, Zhang Min Shin, he said, quote, "We started the implementation of an autofocus optical FE frame, and we are adapting to other mounts like Canon and Nikon. We also believe in Fujifilm and Micro Four Thirds, but these markets are not very important," end quote. All right, Fujifilm and the Micro Four Thirds makers might take issue with that. But the good news is for those with Canon and Nikon bodies, more lenses are on the way, and these Samyang lenses are pretty darn good. You know, it's cool to be ride or die with your favorite camera company's lenses and all, but there's a whole lot of great glass that's out there at quite a savings, and in many cases, they're often better than the Canon and Nikon lenses. I know, blasphemy, right? How dare you tell us that we can get better quality and save money, Sharky James?
but it's true.
You know what's better than a Nikon or Canon lens? Two third-party lenses that are equal or better quality for the same cost of that Canon or Nikon lens. You know, a lot of people right now are like, hey, this guy is starting to make some sense here. And some others are like, wait a second, I can get one third-party lens and that new Maverick Pro drone that I've been eyeing, expand my business's services, and make more money. How dare he? Or I. You get the point. Next. All right, here's a quick tip from everyone's favorite retoucher, Product Nayak of Solstice Retouching, and it involves posting higher resolution images to Facebook. Now, this is especially important for those of you that are making money with your photography, but also for those of us who just want better image quality shown, right? I mean, if you're going to post photos from Aunt Sue's birthday party, why not put the best quality images up, right? Product recently switched over to iOS, uploaded some photos, and was surprised to find that by default, the Facebook app doesn't upload them in high resolution. It's 2016 as I record this, and you would think that everything would be in high resolution, but nope. It's actually a setting that you have to manually turn on. From within the Facebook app, you go to your settings, and then videos and photos, and on the next screen, you'll be able to toggle the setting under both video as well as photos where it says upload HD. It's that simple. And if you're wondering about Android, same thing there as well. Now, this makes sense, of course. Bandwidth costs money. Even Facebook has to pay a bandwidth bill. And can you imagine how big it must be? It must be massive. If they had these settings on by default, they would have to serve up much larger files, which of course takes longer to download. And not only that, they'd have a much larger bandwidth bill. But on the other side of this equation, don't forget that if you toggle this feature to on, it'll use up more of your data. So if your smartphone and/or tablet's data plan is limited, you might want to only do this when you're on Wi-Fi, assuming that your Wi-Fi connection isn't a metered service. If you've got unlimited, knock yourself out. Go ahead and post those photos of Aunt Sue in HD. Now, she might not like that, but that's between you and her. Next. One of the weirdest things seen at Photokina 2016 recently was the Leica 24mm f/14 2x macro lens, an oddball of a lens that was designed to photograph subjects that might not appreciate you being up in their grill. In fact, it kind of looks like the anteater of camera lenses. Do ants even have a grill? I don't know. This lens, though, is going to solve that. On one end of this crazy lens, you've got your standard Nikon or Canon mount, of course. And on the other, what looks to be about a foot and a half or so away, a tiny lens. They haven't announced how much it's going to go for, nor detailed specs about it, but we should see it sometime in 2017. How's that for narrowing it down? Now, a potential concern could be keeping the end of that lens steady enough to get a sharp shot, even at f/14 and a rather high shutter speed if you can get one, which of course means you're going to be at a higher ISO, and that's not ideal. So remember, there's no image stabilization in this lens. So you got the end of that lens hanging way out there, shaking around, and that's not a good thing. Think about how with a super wide lens, things aren't jittery, but when you attach a long zoom and you're, let's say, at the 300 or 400 millimeter end, without IS, your image is dancing all over the place. In this case, it would be dancing ants, but that's not going to be a good image. It might be artistic, but that's probably not what you want. So hand-holding this lens, not a good idea, I'm thinking. You're likely to use this with a tripod. For best results, of course. Next. Today's listener question comes from Dave Dugdale. Yes, the Dave Dugdale. We have quite a few well-known listeners, and Dave is one of them. And yes, that is awesome.
Hey, Chucky James, Dave Dugdale. Let's say you have a swimmer coming towards you doing a butterfly, and the water droplets are out in front of the swimmer, what's usually the case as they come up out of the water and their face is revealed. When you're shooting with autofocus, how do you not capture the water droplets in focus, but the actual swimmer's face in focus? Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your question, Dave. I know from watching your channel that you shoot quite a bit of swim meets, so you know just how challenging they are to shoot. Solving this problem is really going to depend on the camera, how good its AF system is, and how they implement what I'm about to suggest. Well, actually, there are two methods that have worked for me in the past. Mind you, it's been a few years now since I've been with the newspaper and had to shoot a swim meet, but I think this is still going to be sound advice. Now, the first only works if you're a back button autofocus shooter like me. whether the button says AF on or you have another button back there that's mapped your perform autofocus like I do with my X-T2, thanks again, DigiDirect, it's the same thing. In the case of that Fujifilm body, it actually says AEL, which is auto exposure lock. And you know what? I don't know anybody who uses this anymore. I don't know why they put it in cameras. We all want AF on, but it really doesn't matter because, like I said, you can change the functionality of that button and have it initiate your autofocus. And of course, what you want to do is make it so your shutter button only takes the picture. You don't want it to engage autofocus at all. So this back button autofocus technique, you want to separate the two functions. You want the button on the back to start autofocus and do autofocus, and you want that front shutter button to actually take the picture. Shooting swim meets is tricky, but if you use the back button autofocus technique, you're often going to be able to pick off shots that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise. You have to get your pacing down. Remember, they're bobbing in and out of the water, as you know, but they're going at a pretty consistent speed, and that's going to greatly help you. Your autofocus is going to grab that water, of course, but you know what? A lot of times, you're going to actually get the swimmer, and it's going to be hit or miss. Now, the second method is likewise hit or miss, and in my experience, it varies widely from camera maker to camera maker, generation of camera, how they implement this feature, and a whole bunch of other factors. What I'm talking about here is setting the delay until your camera tries to acquire autofocus once it's locked onto a subject and has calculated its speed. I use this all the darn time when shooting football, and it is so, so helpful, especially in that D500 of mine. Like I said, I'm a back button autofocus guy, and in tandem with that, I've got my D500 set to wait a longer period of time until it reacquires focus. Reason being, I don't want the players that go in front of a ball carrier to grab the focus. I don't care about them, right? Their parents care about them, but I don't. I want them to move out of the way because I want my focus on the guy that has the ball. So I want my autofocus to stay with him and not go to the other players. And this works extremely well with the more modern cameras and especially with the D500. It is insane how well it works. In my testing, which is by no means scientific, mind you, it grabs a hold of the subject and just doesn't want to let go. I've got mine set up so it doesn't do it too quickly nor too slowly. Sometimes I'll do it on the slower setting. It's going to depend on how the game is going and how it's working out for me. The point here is you want it to wait a longer period of time so it doesn't try to autofocus on something else. And that is going to be very helpful when you're shooting swimmers. And the reason, of course, is you got all that water splashing around. You don't care about the water droplets. You don't want them in focus. You want the swimmer. If you have it on the fastest setting, anything behind your autofocus point is going to get focused on. Anything. It's not going to wait long at all. In fact, it's not going to wait at all. When you have it set to a slower speed and you've acquired focus, then it'll wait, 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 and then try to focus again. That gives you enough time for the swimmer to come back up out of the water, and if it's calculated everything perfectly, they'll be in focus. Now, if it's not, then you don't want to use this technique, of course, because they'll be out of focus. In that case, you probably want to have this turned off or have it on the very fastest speed and just keep that autofocus point on where the swimmer is and pick off your shots as you go. I mean, you might have to pump that AF on button like crazy just to make sure they're in focus. So for swimmers going a consistent pace, which most of them are, setting your AF to wait the longest to reacquire focus might yield the best results. You'll grab them when they pop their head above the water. Then hopefully when they come back up again, they'll be in focus and the spray of water ahead of them won't be. You know, honestly, Dave, I probably could have just answered this question with it's going to be hit or miss because when it comes to swimming, it's really going to be. As you know, some strokes are extremely challenging to shoot, butterfly being one of them. But when you nail the shot, it looks awesome, of course. Backstroke, not so much. Those aren't exactly engaging photos. Now, if you're able to get up on a ladder or a platform, you can shoot down on them. That might help quite a bit, but that's not necessarily going to be the best angle. You'll have a cleaner background because it'll be mostly water behind them rather than whatever else was directly in the background. But I prefer to shoot from a kneeling or standing position straight on. And as great as that's going to be, all the shots are pretty much going to look the same. So you're going to want to vary your angles, of course. And depending on how many heats your swimmer is in, you should be able to get a number of great shots. Clean backgrounds are great, of course. But as you know, there are people everywhere. So you're going to have pretty much noisy backgrounds. F2.8 is going to be your best friend here. Now, you didn't ask me about this, but here's a bonus tip. And this one has to do with lighting at indoor swim meets. As you know, the lighting at these indoor pools is horrific. I mean, we're talking about dark, maybe sodium vapor lighting. It's just disgusting. And that adds insult to injury because it is so darn humid in these pools. And it's also not good for your gear. So make sure you've got a decent camera that's weather sealed. Otherwise, you might have a mold problem down the road. Many who shoot swim meets have this problem. If the venue that you're shooting at has a white ceiling, and especially if it's low, flash is going to be incredibly helpful here. You're going to throw some light up into that ceiling, and it's going to rain down and lift your overall light level and really, really punch up the colors and also cause you to shoot at a lower ISO. You're going to aim your flash up and at a bit of an angle because they're not right where you are, of course, and dial it back to about a quarter power or so in manual mode, and you'll get 4 pops of flash for every time it charges up. You don't need to light the whole darn pool, of course, so you want a fairly tight pattern. And for most flashes, you're probably going to be able to zoom as far as about 135 millimeters. So if you choose that, you should be good to go. It's going to send a nice pattern of light up into the ceiling and then down toward the swimmer. If the ceiling is black or another color that's dark, it's not going to be helpful, of course. If it's a color other than white, maybe you don't want to do this because then you're going to have nasty looking photos. Before you take that flash out of your bag, though, talk to the organizers of the event. Tell them that you're going to be throwing that flash up into the ceiling. It's not going to be directly into the swimmer's eyes, and that should be okay. I've done that for many, many years, and no one ever complained, but you definitely want to get permission first. Now, back when I shot swim meets, I would use the Rogue Flashbender. That way I was throwing most of the light up into the ceiling, but I would also be pushing some of it forward as well. You're pretty much going to make a snoot out of it, and then one section is exposed. That's what's pointing forward, and then you're good to go. Thanks again so much for your question, Dave. I really appreciate it, and I hope that helped you out. Now, Dave had a question about photography, but when it comes to video, he's the man you want to ask. He's doing some awesome things over at learningvideo.com, and he's closing in on 200,000 subscribers on YouTube. That is just craziness right there. So if you want to learn more about video, he's got a ton of them over there. Go ahead and check him out, please. Now, if you have a question you want answered here on the show, hit our voicemail widget over at petapixel.com/podcast, and I'd be happy to answer it here. Next. Ever since footage of the new DJI Maverick Pro drone has gone up from the likes of Casey Neistat to the folks over at Digital Rev and others, there's been criticism that the video from that drone was less than stellar. I covered the announcement of this great new drone in episode 111, and within hours was flooded with messages and emails pointing out posts and videos online about this video issue. Well, as it turns out, it may be more user error than anything else. In fact, that's what it apparently is. You see, unlike DJI's Phantom 4 and other great drones, the Maverick Pro requires you to tap your phone or tablet screen to initiate focus. But somehow, people miss that. So Neistat and others were simply not operating it properly, and with their reach, their great reach, the drone was panned and many called it a loser. Now Neistat has since taken to Twitter saying, quote, "Mavic drone update. Apparently the focus works different on the Mavic. I played with it and I was able to get much sharper images," end quote. You know, I have a large audience, but these guys eclipse me in their reach. So when they talk about a product being bad or not as good as they thought, that can affect how millions of people view that product. As I record this, nearly 2 million people have watched that video from Casey Neistat, where he compares the DJI Maverick Pro to the Phantom 4 and one of the GoPro cameras that you can mount to GoPro's Karma drone, since he didn't have that available at the time. Now, who knows how many people are going to see that tweet versus the video he put out about the Maverick Pro and the image quality not being so good, which we now know is not true, but I would think a lot less. I think, though, that as more and more people put video online showing just how great the footage is from the Maverick Pro, all this will go away. Like I said in that last episode, I'm leaning heavily toward getting a Maverick Pro myself, but it's that removable stabilizer that's in the Karma that may just sway me in that direction. We'll see. I don't know. I might not get either. And hey, if DJI or GoPro wants to send me one of their drones, have at it. It can be yours that has the honor of being crashed by me. Because it's going to crash at some point. I almost guarantee it. You know, it was a bit perplexing when people posted about the footage being soft because that just didn't make any sense. DJI has a boatload of cash and this isn't their first rodeo. You know, they've been making drones for a while now, and cameras for their drones for not as long, but still, they've been really good cameras. So a blurry camera and a brand new, innovative, feature-packed drone just didn't make any sense now, did it? Thanks to video posted by photographer and videographer Michael Shane Bloom and others since those initial videos were posted, it's clear to see, pun intended, that the quality of 4K footage out of the Maverick Pro is just fine. Now, I think the camera in the Maverick Pro has a smaller sensor than the one in the GoPro Karma, so of course that's going to affect image quality. But as Shane Bloom points out, it's perfectly acceptable. Most people probably can't even tell the difference. So, crisis averted. You can safely buy a Maverick Pro, or a Karma drone for that matter. You know, whatever you want, they're both incredible pieces of technology. And of course, with this or any purchase, if you're using Amazon, kindly head over to my website at lensshark.com, hit my impossible to miss Amazon affiliate link. It's a great way to support this podcast, and it doesn't add anything to your purchase. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 112 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question to answer here on the show, kind of like Dave Dugdale did. Actually, exactly like Dave Dugdale did. But if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail like he did, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm LensShark, LensShark. I've been doing Instagram stories lately. People been watching them like crazy. And you know what? As weird as I am here on the show, I'm even weirder on video. So that's something to check out, I think. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 113. Well, it's f/8.25 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
Like I said, I'm a back button autofocus guy, so I've got my D500 set to wait quite a while until it tries to weir. Now the second Macid. We have another blooper, guys.